Accession number 32070, reel 4.
Arthur Bolo, reel 4. And so that, can you remember, what was it like, the being part of the Pacific Fleet? Was it quite big? Because you went en masse, didn't you, to Okinawa?
Yes.
Can you describe, where did you meet up?
I can't remember where we... We must have come from Sydney. Met up out there. And
how many ships were there? Can you give me a sketch?
I couldn't really...
No, but I mean, can you describe the scene for me?
There was these aircraft, there was two or three aircraft carriers thing, and we was like this port side of the aircraft carriers, and so when we did our bombarding and that, and there was all these other smaller ships as well, like destroyers and that. And that was about it, I think.
And you were just on the pom-pom gun again?
Yeah, I was on this 8-barrel pom-pom then. I can show you.
Pacific Fleet, that's it. And what were you bombarding? Were you told to aim at anything in particular?
We didn't have nothing to do with the bomb. It's a 40-inch guns that were doing the bombarding. I mean, we don't know what they were doing. They were just firing, and that they all we knew about it until this suicide plane came around.
So you were on anti-aircraft?
Yeah.
And did you know about suicide planes before you got there? Had you heard about them?
Yeah.
How had you heard about them?
Well, it was all in the news, wasn't it? Yeah.
And what happened next?
We carried on, and then we, from just after that, we came and we went to Durban, and they were putting all these anti-aircraft guns, Webster anti-aircraft guns on. Then the war ended when we was in Durban.
Can you remember how you heard?
Yeah. I was detailed off. There was some do in the town hall that, and it's all four people in the force, and I was detailed off to be like a MP or something, you know.
Let me start again.
And he was in the town hall there, and we heard it there.
And who did you hear it from?
It just went around, didn't it?
And what was the reaction like?
Oh, yeah, it was all drinking up. And just after that, Lord Mountbatten came on board ship, and he said to us, he stood from here to you, Lord Mountbatten, and I was surprised all this makeup he had on it. I've never seen a bloke like that. It took me by surprise, you know. But anyway, he said, I suppose you're wondering why you're having all these anti-aircraft guns. He said, well, you were due to go up the Malacca Straits invading up there. So, at the end of the war, and that was it. So, we got out of that job.
Did you feel, were you glad to get out of that?
Well, not necessary. In them days, I mean, by that time I was 22, 23, had no use I wish I was that age now.
So tell me about what happened next. So you met Lord Mountbatten, you knew the war was over. What happened next?
We'd come back to England.
Can you remember what route you took back?
Yeah, we'd come through the Suez and the Canal again. And then we ended up in Portsmouth on the 1st of January 1946. I can remember that.
And was there any kind of reception to meet you? Or?
Yeah, there was quite a, thing, what happens. And then I was there for 3 or 4 days, and then I was sent to get my demob suit. And
tell me about that. What was your how did you get your suit?
Oh, there was all these trilbyats things like that, and I picked a grey pinstripe suit and that trilbyat, and my dad laughed at that.
Why was that?
I didn't wear, but I showed it. Going back to my dad, that's one of the biggest regrets in my life. I missed an adult life with him, because I say it was 1946, and I got January 46, and they got sent me home, but I was technically in the Navy until the May. But what I'm saying about my dad, I never had adult life with him. I missed all that. I do regret that, you know. So when I was 18, I went in the Navy and I was away most of the time and never had.
So you didn't get to know him as an adult?
No, that's what I always quite often go through my mind now, that I wish I could have had an adult life with my dad.
So he got to know you and what you'd done.
Yeah.
He wasn't in the Navy, was he? Before?
No, he was in the Army. He was in First World War. He was he was in the artillery. Yeah. He never said anything.
Okay, so you got your demob suit. Did you get anything else to go with it?
No, I don't.
Were there papers or?
Oh, got the discharge papers and your history of what you did. It was all put down from. When you went from here to there, not from here to there, but from the venomous to the how, and things like that, from your character.
What did they say about your character?
Very good. Yeah, you've got VG on it, so I presume that's very good.
Even with all that rum. And did you get any? Was there any money? Was there any pay?
No, it was just normal pay. But I did. I never applied for my medals until about 1948 or something like that. And the only reason I did apply for my medals because they was given a £6 prize money, I think they called it. So that's why I photographed my medals there with the wife there. And that's why I applied for them. Otherwise, I did. And then I got a nephew in America. And when my sister came over, she said to me, "Alan said he would like your medals." I said, "I'll give them." So I gave them to him. And then I joined the British Legion. And I thought, oh, I can't go down there on parade without any medals. So I applied for the medals. And I had paid £58 or something to get a replacement. Well, I think they're dearer now.
And what was it like? Just take you back to D-Mob. Was there sort of a last night on board ship, or was there anywhere? How did you say goodbye?
Well, tell you the truth, when we got into Portsmouth, the majority of the ship's crew went almost straight away. That's so I didn't go for 2 or 3 days afterwards, because I wouldn't see to get demobbed. It was worked on your age and your length of service. So my age and length of service didn't. I was Group 41, if I remember rightly, and I wasn't due to be demobbed until the May. So they sent me home, and so technically I was still in the Navy until the end of May.
And what was it like readjusting to civilian life?
I didn't find no problem. I told my wife and that, you know, and it didn't bother me really. And, you know, I think I adjusted pretty well.
What did you do? Did you get a job?
I went back to the old job in the factory. And then I stopped there and I had to do night work. I was doing a month of 8 night work. And one morning I came home and my wife was expecting my first daughter, and she'd had a nightmare. So I went back to the factory and I said, I'll have to get off nights. I said, my wife's had a nightmare. You can't do that. I said, well, stick your job, because them days you could get a job anywhere. So I left there and I went as a milkman, and that was quite good. I quite healthy. I used to quite like it, actually. It's a dash about like a 2-year-old to get finished early and finish at lunchtime every day, you know.
You must have had to start very early though, didn't you?
Yeah, but I was up at 5 o'clock this morning. All my life I've always never had any trouble getting up. I think I used to put an alarm clock on, but in all my working life I think if only about half a dozen times that the alarm woke me up. I used to wake up and put my hand on it and get up when I felt like it, you know, well, when it was time to get out to go to work.
Okay.